Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call it S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Posen, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolte.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. The truth is that this week, Coulson and his operatives, their mission is to actually watch a movie, which is kind of cool. That's a lot easier than a lot of the other missions that they take on. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I agree. I think the movie is easier, but it's not always as good as the actual case folder. You know, usually the case folder has more information in it, and they cut some stuff out of the movie.
That's
not
true.
How that works.
Yeah. It's always better to read the original case folder instead of watching the movie. So, yeah.
You just get more into the character and stuff.
Yeah, that is true.
Motivation of the suspect and things.
And this month's movie that they're watching may actually be more dangerous than any other mission they've ever undertaken. They are watching Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Which sounds on the top, but, you know, like a really cool idea for a made-for-TV movie. And we'll discuss that. We've got some other news here to tide you over until the season 3 starts up. So,
it's
Josh,
good, though. You having a good summer so far?
I'm having a good summer so far, yeah. It's been summery, but not too bummery. So how about you?
I'm good. Been relaxing. I've replaced the black sunglasses with the white rimmed ones. I know those aren't regulation, but you know, just trying to relax a little bit in our time off. So I feel like I'm doing pretty good. But I'm itching to talk about some S.H.I.E.L.D. It's been a little while, so I'm glad that we're getting together at least, you know, for now in the summer.
Yeah. Well, I'll just remind you, every hour, remember just to move your tie to the other side of your chest so it doesn't you know, leave a little white mark where you tan.
I'm trying to do that. Yeah, I had a little accident earlier in the summer, and you know, the nice white stripe down my manly Nick Fury chest.
There you go. So, well, why don't you kick off a little description about what we're doing here on Summer Spectacular number 4?
All right. Well, this is exciting to me because as you said, we're talking about Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Which actually originally aired. It was a TV movie, it wasn't in theaters, but it aired on the Fox network, I guess.
It might have been in theaters in Germany, actually. I don't know.
You know what? That wouldn't surprise me a bit, actually.
It would not.
It aired on May 26th of 1998. So that's doesn't sound like a long time ago to me, but I guess that's getting further and further away. So
17 years ago, man, that's quite a time.
But when you say a year in the 90s, does it feel like that long ago to you? To me, it just seems like yesterday. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, when you say a date in the 80s or the 90s, it's like, oh yeah, that wasn't too long ago. But then you start realizing it's, you know, 15, 20, 25 years. So
before you know it, we're gonna be reading these case files on a rocking chair on our porch, right? But this particular movie was written by David Goyer and directed by Rod Hardy, and it of course starred the Hoff himself, David Hasselhoff.
Oh, swoon!
Yes, star of you probably know him from the SpongeBob movie. I think is that
yes, that is with the kids now. That is exactly what I would have seen him in.
Me too, actually. That's probably the most recent thing. But of course, Baywatch, Knight Rider, and Germany. So, since we're going to talk about this, and I'm not sure exactly how many people have seen this, let me just give you a brief description for both of you that have seen this one. Super spy Nick Fury may be retired and hanging out as manly as possible in the Yukon, but S.H.I.E.L.D. needs him back. after Baron von Strucker's frozen body is stolen so his daughter Viper can create a deadly virus to destroy America. Now, Nick works very closely with Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Very nice. Good, Thank you very much. Yeah.
Alexander Pierce. And, of course, his good friend, Don't Call Me Dum Dum Dugan. Nick tracks down the dastardly daughter and her twin brother to take her and Hydra down for good, of course. But when the vile vixen poisons him, he only has a few hours to finish the job before he's smoked his last cigar. Can he do it? Well, some people stand in the darkness, afraid to step into the light. But not Nick Fury. He's always ready and won't let you out of his sight.
Wait, isn't that like the Green Lantern oath or something?
Yeah, it's close.
All right. Wow. So, and you know what's great? We will put in our show notes, you can all get a chance to watch this so that when you listen to us talk about it here in just a little bit, you can actually understand what we're discussing because the entire movie is available on YouTube. What? Yes, available on YouTube. Can you believe that? We are living in the future. This is amazing. So, well, before, Josh, before we get to discussing critically underrated Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., I would like to talk a little bit of news here about a number of things we've been hearing about Season 3. We surprisingly, which I always find surprising during the off-season, that they do have so much news that's out there. The you know, with the show not being on, well, when the show is on, it seems like we don't get a lot of news, but we seem to be getting a lot during the summer here. And I think that's also just because there's a lot of people with free time on their hands. There's conventions that are going on, such
well,
as
you know,
the,
I think also they do a lot of the planning in the summertime, you know, and during the season, that's when it's all happening, all that news. So,
well, but yeah, they're also busy. So I think they're not, you know, I mean, other than perhaps Ming-Na, you know, who's tweeting all the time. A lot of people just don't have time to be talking about this stuff, or they don't want to spoil like what they're actually working on at that point. Like it's fine True. For them to be talking now during the summer in these sweeping arcs, or, you know, we're getting like casting news and stuff like that. That's other stuff.
Right.
But there probably will be a bunch of information that comes from San Diego Comic-Con. They are having the Marvel Television Presents panel this coming Friday, July 10th, 3 to 4:15 in ballroom number 20. So if anyone's going to be out there for San Diego Comic-Con, take a look for that. There will be members of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter on hand. I know Clark Gregg's going to be out there, and I believe Haley Atwell, and possibly James Darcy. I don't remember if...
I think he's going to be out there, too.
I think he was coming. He was going to be there. So, and I'm sure there may be some other people that may be there, but not on the panel. Probably not Jeff Johns. Who's the... who's the other showrunner on the... show. I'm totally blanking on the guy's name. Bell.
Yes, Bell.
Sorry. Not the Whedons, but not Marshall Bell. Whatever his name is. Anyway, there'll be some of the creative people out there as well for it. So,
Mr. Bell and his team are going to help us out.
Yes. And we have two new series regulars to talk about as well that have been announced here. Well, this I think shortly after Season 2 wrapped, we found out that Luke Mitchell, who is the Inhuman...
Lincoln.
Thank you. Boy, and, you know, the show goes away and I forget everybody's names.
Yeah, no, I had to look that one up just to refresh my memory. And hey, that's pretty cool. I'm hoping they'll give him a little bit more to do in Season 3.
He's going to free the slaves, Josh. He's going to free the slaves.
All right. With his big axe and his attacking
yes.
vampires and things.
Yep. Watch out for the vampires and stuff like that. He, which is pretty cool. That gave a lot of credence to the things that we were talking about at the end of last season. You know, with the potential of the Caterpillar project that Sky was handed by Coulson at the end of the season finale. We also found out, and this one just I gave a big whoop for this. Henry Simmons, Mac, is going to be a series regular. Which
Wait,
is
hold
awesome.
On, hold on, hold on, just 1 second. Woo! All right, I'm back.
All right.
I'm very excited about that.
It, you know, because as we discussed on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files throughout the end of season two here, I mean, it looked like he was not going to be on the show. Like, you know, I was worried potentially that the character was either going to be killed off or leave the show. And the fact that they're keeping him around now, they can't keep Trip around, but keeping Henry Simmons around, that's probably the second best thing I think we could get.
I agree with that. Yeah, he was a very interesting character. You know, people really liked him a lot. The way he ended the season showed how much potential that character has. You know, I mean, they could go in a lot of really cool directions with him. So I'm really excited to see him. In honor of him becoming a series regular, I've decided to kind of dedicate myself to whatever diet and bodybuilding program he is on get myself looking as much like Henry Simmons as possible by season three. You think I can do that?
I think that would be awesome. I think all that would help really promote the show, our podcast, you know, and the show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, in the meantime and stuff like that.
I think the closest I'm going to get is carrying an axe. That's about us. That's probably.
Well, I was going to say, maybe he's the one that gives Lincoln the axe to fight the vampires.
I think you might be right.
So, and, you know, he'll just give them a stern look and they'll just vaporize in front of them or something like that. Also, this year, Marvel are celebrating the 50th anniversary of S.H.I.E.L.D. They made their debut 50 years ago. 50 years ago, man.
Wow.
In the pages of Strange Tales magazine, published by Marvel. And so, in honor of that, Marvel is publishing five one-shot comics, as well as doing a number of other trade paperbacks and variant covers and things like that. So you can see the initial artwork and write-ups for what is coming in September of 2015 on our Facebook page. But the one-shots are going to be, there's going to be a Nick Fury one-shot written by David Walker, an Agent May one-shot written by Jody Hauser. And now these are all within the Marvel, not within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, within the Marvel comic book universe.
Right.
So it may not, the things that the characters do may not be exactly as you see them on TV and in the films and stuff like that. So just keep that in mind. Mockingbird's getting a one-shot by Chelsea Kane. Agent Carter is getting a one-shot by Catherine Immonen. And then there is a Quake one-shot by Matt Rosenberg and Patrick Kindlin. And then some of the variant covers that they're doing, a gentleman by the name of John Tyler Christopher is doing what he calls action figure variant covers. He's been doing this for the Star Wars comics. And it looks, the cover of the comic book looks like an action figure packaging, the blister with the figure in there and all the accessories and everything like that. And he's doing one for Coulson, May, Fitz, Simmons, Agent Carter, and Sky. And they're going to be on the different one-shots as variant covers. So just check your comic book store. So
I cannot tell you how cool I think these are. I really, really like these a lot.
They look really realistic.
They do, and just the idea, and you know what? Honestly, here's why I like these particular covers so much. Is it reminds me of our show and how much fun I have talking about it with you. I mean, I'm not bragging about our show or anything like that. I just like them because it kind of just it reminds me of how much fun we have each week talking about this show. So I'm gonna pick all of these up.
And if you collect all the covers, you can build your own Deathlock. They've got like the little. What are those things called, like action figure incentive pieces or whatever?
Yeah, so a different piece of the figure for each cover.
Right. So if you were to, if these were real toys, which a lot of people are saying they wish they would make these. I mean, the Agent May one looks kick ass. It's got six different hand variations that you can remove her hands and put these different martial art posed hands on there. So it's it's pretty cool. And they come with their own set of sunglasses. Very cool. So anyway, those are going to be on sale in September. You can check with your local comic book store or pre-order through any comic book website, through Marvel's comic site or through Things from Another World or someplace like that, if you guys are interested in those. We've also got some information about Agent Carter. That is, as I believe we previously mentioned, that did get picked up for season two and will be 10 episodes instead of 8 at this point. And we knew Peggy was going to be moving to Los Angeles for her adventures in season two. Mm-hmm. We still don't know about her girlfriend who wants to be the actress. See, totally forgetting her name too now.
Anyway, I had it and I thought it was going to help and then I forgot.
I know, and I had it there for a second. Anyway, but we did hear that James Darcy, who plays Jarvis, and Enver Jokaj, who plays... you know what? I should have just looked all this stuff up before we started. Anyway, they're both signed on to be in season two, which will be interesting. So that, you know, we know that some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. Operatives will follow her out to Los Angeles, presumably. And knowing that Jarvis will be there, presumably Howard Stark's got a mansion out there in Hollywood as well that they'll be able to use for their base of operations, I'm guessing. That would be
probably
cool.
A few more girlfriends that could cause potential problems too.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm hoping that they bring Dottie and that whole Black Widow initiative, Leviathan thing into it. Now that we've even been teased with that a little bit more in Avengers: Age of Ultron. So
yes.
there's more.
I have heard that they're going to be, you know, using some Marvel bad guys, you know, actually some comic bad guys in the show too. So,
oh really?
Not sure who yet.
Okay. But, so making it more, comic book style bad guys with superpowers maybe or something like that.
It seems like they're going a little bit more that direction. Don't know if they'll use the superpowers so much, but, you know, when you're talking S.H.I.E.L.D. and those kinds of things, it can be, more the, espionage spy kind of storyline. So I'm not sure who they'll pick for the bad guy. What villain you guys want to see? You know, I'm wondering who you are interested in seeing in Agent Carter.
That would be really cool. And if there was some way for them to even tie it into the bigger universe, potentially with Ant-Man, there's talk that Ant-Man's got some flashback stuff that might lead back. Might not go back as far as Agent Carter, depending on when this season two takes place. We're not sure if it follows immediately after season one or if they're moving it up in the timeline just a little bit.
Well, now I'm excited about Ant-Man for sure. But I don't know the full story of where Ant-Man is headed, but I know that Paul Rudd's character, you know, he gets the suit, I guess, right?
Honey, where is my super suit?
But he gets it from Michael Douglas, right? From Hank Pym.
Hank Pym, an older character. And he supposedly had built it in the early 80s or something like that. So there, you know, he was superheroing around that time or possibly before. In the comic book prequel to Ant-Man, Agent Carter is older, right? So she'd be in her, I don't know, 50s or 60s or something like that. And she has a cameo in the comic because she's working with S.H.I.E.L.D. at that point, and they bring Hank Pym in to help out with a very small problem.
A very small problem.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice.
Before we get too far away from this, Enver Jokaj, Daniel Souza, right? Okay. Agent Souza. Mm-hmm. And then Angie Martinelli is Lindsay Fonseca's character that is the aspiring actress from the Laundrette, the
uh-huh.
Right? What are they called? The food place. It's not a Laundrette. It's a.
I think it's called a food place. That's it.
The food place? Okay.
Uh huh. She was her friend. Yes, we're on a roll today. So Haley Atwell does show up in Ant-Man 2, by the way. She has a credit in Ant-Man.
Really?
So,
She also has a credit for Captain America Civil War as well.
Wow, she's all over the place. She'll be at Comic-Con. She's like Samuel L. Jackson these days. She's everywhere.
I'm going to have to go with Hayley Atwell as better than Samuel L. Jackson. But if she does show up in, you know, Snakes on a Train, I would I would definitely pay money to see her fight off a bunch of snakes on a train.
That might be the villain in season two of Agent Carter.
Well, so season three of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been getting a lot of tease online now. Marvel's been putting in, I'm going to use air quotes here and say, you know, secret messages into their promotional materials that they've been putting online. They're not too well hidden. And the fact, I think, that they told you how to decode it when they released the first image. But they are really teasing. Hang on. Sky told me I need to be able to keep a secret. So maybe I shouldn't share this.
We're not real good at secrets. I think it's okay. The people here are all cleared. We said, right. That the people listening are cleared to know the truth here.
Yeah. Right. Okay. That's right. I forgot about that part. Right. So, okay. So Secret Warriors, the comic series Secret Warriors is being adapted as storylines for season three. Now, as we've discussed about, I think you and I discussed this a year ago, last summer, between season one and two.
One of our summer specials last year, yep.
Yeah. It's not really a secret. They've been mining this for a while now, but it's really cool because there's a lot more super-powered characters in Secret Warriors. You've got, you know, Hydra, Leviathan, and some other bad guys, bad organizations and stuff like that, potentially to tie in here. So there's some really cool things that could be coming along. And I recommend the Secret Warriors trade paperback volume one. I think it's like $20. You get 18 issues of Secret Warriors in it, the first 16 issues of the series. And I believe it's two of the Dark Reign titles that came out in conjunction, because Secret Warriors came right after the Secret Invasion, when S.H.I.E.L.D. fell and was replaced by, I believe it was Hammer, the organization Hammer. And so Nick Fury is kind of operating in the dark, or in the shadows here with his Secret Warriors team. So
right now, last summer when we talked about this, which I recommend you guys going back and listening to, that was a fun discussion. That's, you can go on randomchatter.com and find our other summer special on that. But it was, you and I talked about how it felt like they were kind of setting up the storyline on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to match this, and there were some similarities. But now it actually seems like they're going to be a little bit deeper within the comic book storyline now that they have set it up.
Right. And I have not read the entire series. I think the series is like 30 issues or something like that. So
yes.
I'm interested to read a little bit further into the series and see, you know, what other ideas they may come up with as the series went on after it, you know, got out of the first couple of arcs.
After that, it gets a little further away from where the TV series is now, or at least, you know, where it has a possibility of going that way, I suppose. But it gets a little bit deeper into some of the more superpowered villains and things like that. But still good. Still good comic book storyline.
Okay. And season three has been announced as premiering on September 29th, so Tuesday, September 29th, 2015, which we still don't know when the DVD is coming out. I know when all the DVDs for the CW shows are coming out, which I believe is the week before that, on September 22nd. So I'm hoping the S.H.I.E.L.D. DVD comes out around that time as well. But if it follows suit, I think with last year, it will get a premiere, and I think the DVD might be out that previous week, or it might be out like the week of the premiere, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, it doesn't give you much time to review it.
It does not give you much time to review it or to catch up, but fear not, because if you do have Netflix, you can be catching up on all the season two episodes. And I know one of the guys at my office just did this. He watched the back half of season two, because he kind of was holding off because he was kind of not too sold on the first half of season two. And then, of course, they took the big break with Agent Carter, which he wasn't really watching. And so after that point, he kind of got out of it. So he just finished watching the last, whatever, 10 or 12 episodes on the back half, and enjoyed it and was able to do it all on Netflix. So you can kind of just binge watch it right there. And, you know, it's the best way to do it. No commercials and nothing like that. So,
yeah. And, you know, sometimes, and I would say Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really falls into this category, but sometimes it's actually better, more enjoyable to watch several episodes in a row with the storyline that they had, because it kind of fits together so well that it makes a little bit more sense. And just like you and I have, you know, not been watching the show for a little bit more than a month or so, maybe almost 2 months, yeah. And we've forgotten some things, you know, and the same thing can happen in between weeks when you're watching a show. So when you kind of binge watch this series especially, I think it kind of fits together more as little mini movies, but that's just my opinion. But
well, the way that the season finale with the two episodes that they put together for the season finale, I mean, that really worked like a little mini movie. I thought it worked great. And yeah, definitely watching several of the episodes, especially with the way they've been running the show in the second season, works a lot better. It was, you know, there were episodes in first season that were just kind of standalone episodes, mm-hmm. and, you know, they didn't really connect to each other. We were still setting up characters and characterization and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely with the storyline with the Inhumans and everything else that was going on this season, there was definitely a lot more cohesion, and you didn't get the payoff in one episode. And I think that's some of the problems that I know I was having at different times during season two. And I've heard from other people that, you know, they just weren't as engaged because the payoffs weren't quite there. But as the series progressed into season two, you know, it all came together. So it worked out nicely.
And if you do go back on Netflix and watch those, then you can download our episodes of season two for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files and kind of listen to us discuss those as well. Good to do while you're, you know, working in the yard or working on your tan when you're moving your tie around your chest.
There you go. Yep. Go watch an episode, download one of our podcasts, and then you can re-listen to it there. All right. So, Josh, you ready to talk a little about Mr. Hasselhoff and Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So this, so as you mentioned before, this is written by David Goyer, and that name may sound familiar to a number of people. He wrote all three of the Blade movies with Wesley Snipes. He also wrote Batman Begins. He's writing Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. So the majority of his writing credits are superhero inspired in one way or another.
Okay. Well, he knows what genre he can write, but
yeah. And I know some people have issue with some of his writing, because there's been some good stuff that he's written. Like, I think Batman Begins is pretty good, and then there's other stuff that is not fabulous. I was not a huge fan of the original Blade movie. There are other versions of Blade, like it's part 2 and 3, that I enjoy more. I know some people would take advantage of me and say that I'm just being an idiot or something like that, because a lot of people like the first one. So
you like what you like. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, it's time for some true confessions here.
Okay.
I didn't hate this.
Oh, I did not hate this either, but it was definitely a period piece, I would say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. I'm not. Hey, I said I didn't hate it. I didn't say it deserved some awards. I just I thought it was a good time, man. I really had fun watching this.
Well, I had seen this previously, and I was the one, if we're doing true confessions, I'm the one that forced you to sit down and watch this, because I said we should do this for the show.
It was more of a, you know, forceful nudge, I think. It didn't take a lot of convincing for me.
Right. Come on, man. It's David Hasselhoff playing Nick Fury. So it came out in 98. I'd been reading comics for quite a while at that point. And I'd seen most of this when it was out on Fox originally. But I know at some point I've seen it here probably within the last 5 years or something like that.
Really?
Definitely before we started watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Was it on TV or did you
via YouTube.
Oh, okay. All right.
So because I've also got a piece of a website that I have where I just have a list of all sorts of different movies that have been movies and or TV shows that have stemmed from comic books that are based on a comic book. And I remember when I was putting that together.
I might have to have you reference what your memory of that in a few minutes. I want to talk about different comic book, versions.
Oh, okay. Okay. But when I was putting that together and I was like, oh, that's right. David Hasselhoff did this Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie. I had watched it again. And for what was available at the time in the late 90s, you know, we'd had the campy Batmans with the George Clooney, the Val Kilmer Batmans and stuff like that. We hadn't gotten into the new Marvel movies. Those were still 10 years away. We hadn't gotten into the revitalization of the Batman franchise or the Superman franchise at that point. They were still looking to, try to do another Superman movie at that point. With Nick Cage, if I recall.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was supposed to be
that's right around there.
Like a mid-90s sort of revitalization. But from a comic reader standpoint, I thought Hasselhoff pulled off an amazing, gritty Nick Fury. Now, this is obviously the Caucasian version of Nick Fury, the classic version of Nick Fury, not the one that we've come to know with Samuel Jackson from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And the fact that they threw in all these different characters from the S.H.I.E.L.D. franchise, as you mentioned, you had Dum Dum Dugan, you had the Contessa, you had Gabe Jones, you had Clay Quartermain, Baron Strucker.
Alexander Pierce,
who was a relatively new character, actually, at the time. Definitely not a Robert Redford-looking kind of character there. You know, Hasselhoff plays him as the cigar-chomping, 5 o'clock shadow, grizzled World War II veteran, just barking orders and, snappy comebacks and stuff like that. And for what it is, I thought he was great in it. And,
agreed.
There was cheeseballness and it follows a pretty standard storyline and stuff like this. I think it was based a little bit on some of the elements that came out of Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., which was a 4-issue prestige format comic book that came out in 1988 by Paul Neary. And so there were some elements from that, just kind of stylistically and with some of the characters and stuff like this, not like a plot. I don't know that the plot of this movie, which is Hydra trying to unleash a biological weapon on Manhattan, I don't think that is from any one particular comic storyline. I think it was just created for the show.
Okay. Or from every comic book storyline ever written for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, there's the idea, possibility.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was the Nick Fury, the classic Nick Fury that is a really – it's a fun read when you go back and look at those. Yeah, definitely – dated as far as his personality, his attitude. That's like when you go back and watch the old Bond films and you can see how sexist they kind of are and how it's just a different time period for the portrayal of macho men. But when you know that and understand that and know what they were kind of going for, you understand it. And also, I think even Hasselhoff portrayed him as, he was that kind of a sexist, macho kind of guy. But he did have a kindness and a kind heart. And when he had that little scene there, a little character development scene with the Contessa there, it was always sort of an underwritten, he acts like this big bad tough guy, but he's still got a good heart and he does the right thing, that kind of thing, you know?
Right.
I think even James Bond was supposed to be like that.
Right. And he's kind to his subordinates. I mean, you've got Alexander Pierce, who is, he's a young, green agent in this. He's a Brit who, you know, has just started with SHIELD or something like that. And this is kind of his first operation, and Nick's barking orders at him and kind of flustering him and, you know, calling him names and things like this. But why is he doing that? He's doing it to show him how, you know, to stand on his own as an agent. And, you know, then towards the end of the show gives him, you know, the big thumbs up. It's like, you know, you're a really good agent kind of thing. And just that little word of encouragement after all this other stuff, you know, kind of makes it all worthwhile for this character.
Yeah.
And I think you can see Hasselhoff is kind of playing it over the top a little bit, but they don't. I feel like he doesn't take it quite into the world of camp. He's not looking at the camera and kind of winking that, you know, he knows what's going on, because you look at some of these scenes and the characters are just chewing up all the scenery. I mean, it's just, especially the bad guys, Andrea von Strucker, who's one of Baron Strucker's twins. She just goes to town on a couple of these sequences. And
now that is over the top, I thought.
It was over the top, and it's because I don't think she had the gravitas to pull it off. She was just trying to keep it big in the same way that Hasselhoff was doing it. But, you know, I mean, he's just a big guy. He had the voice down for the way that I kind of feel like Nick Fury sounds. And, you know, he just... He really led the group. I felt like Lisa Renee as the Contessa, she could not really keep up as well. I thought, however, some of the other supporting actors did pretty good. The director,
I actually thought she should have been a little bit more over the top for that character.
Yeah, I agreed with that. Now the director of SHIELD went way over the top. So supposedly there's this guy that's completely in charge of SHIELD, right? Since Nick Fury has not been around for 5 years, he basically got booted out. And so he's the director pincher is the overall director of SHIELD, and he's a paper pusher, you know, government stool or whatever like that. And, this guy just plays him way over the top, you know, comes in yelling at Nick Fury, of course, and he yells at all the different characters, you know, like, oh, you need to do this and tell me what's going on and you can't go and do this. And everybody just ignores him and tells him to, you know, take a dump. Okay. You know, it's like, if you were really the boss, are you just going to let these people, like, your subordinates walk all over you?
It wasn't very convincing that a guy like that would be in charge of what we know as SHIELD, at least what we know SHIELD is now, you know? I mean, a guy like that really would not be in charge. That's your, I don't know, your stereotypical 80s, 90s boss of any kind of organization, you know?
But more like a business boss, you know, not like a military. Like, it's definitely not the kind of character type we would see in, say, Lethal Weapon, you know, as the tough but kind sergeant who yells orders.
Not like that, yeah, for sure.
At his people. But he seems like the boss. Oh, excuse me, I'm going to have to bleep that out. You know, you find in business movies where he's, you know, leading the corporation into the ground or something like that.
Right. But the character, you know, because of the character, there were a lot of really good classic lines mentioned either by him or about him when Fury he first meets him. You know, guys like you tend to cling to the bowl no matter how many times you flush.
That was good. He's also got another line later where he's screaming at Fury because, of course, he's told Nick Fury and the people that he's with to turn their plane around and head back to base because they're not authorized on this mission. And, of course, everybody's like, hello, I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I can't hear you. And Fury's like, you know, well, I guess, you know, we're not going to listen to you or whatever. And he's like, don't you dare cut me off, you comic book coward.
Yes.
And, of course, they cut him off, and it's like, wow. So, you know, they're really kind of blasting the character right there and stuff like that. So, but it was a fun run. Obviously, it did some setup at the end in case they decided they wanted to make another film or a TV series or something like that.
In case they wanted to, or in case they were actually given the money to.
Yeah, or asked to. It's like, hey, you guys never resolved all this stuff at the end. Did you want to finish that up, or should we just call it a day? So
it didn't work.
No, it did not. This was very short lived. It's about 90 minutes, total, because it was a 2-hour made for TV movie. Special effects are a little lackluster, but looking back at it, based on what they've done with S.H.I.E.L.D., you can see a lot of really great elements from the S.H.I.E.L.D. comics that they've put into this movie. I mean, they had the LMDs. They had the helicarrier, which looked a little weird. I wasn't crazy about that. But with the cloaking technology, all sorts of other little gadgets. You had, just like I said, all these different characters. Now, they changed some stuff around a little bit. The Contessa – I'm sorry, not the Contessa. Strucker's daughter is one of a pair of twins. In the comic books, it's Andrea and Andreas von Strucker, and they have mutant powers and become the character Fenris, which is a wolf they can join together. So they did away with that. They made her brother Werner von Strucker, who is actually an older brother to the twins, even though they look similar. They're not supposed to be twins, I guess, because she ends up just basically letting him die. But she is also the character of Viper, which in the comics is yet another character that's played by the Viper moniker is used by a number of different female characters. People who saw The Wolverine with Hugh Jackman, which is the one that took place in Japan, will remember there was a Viper character in that, which I think was a little more to what that character is in the comic books, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of combined some stuff like that. It was pretty cool. But they didn't call Dum-Dum Dum-Dum throughout the movie.
He didn't look like Dum-Dum either.
Yeah, he didn't have any of the facial hair. He didn't wear a bowler hat. Gabe Jones was black, so that was cool. They got that down. I don't know if Alexander Pierce is supposed to be British in the comics. I do not recall because he's not had a huge career in there, and obviously the Winter Soldier had him thrust into the spotlight a lot more. But overall, it's an interesting history piece for people to see how far we've come with adaptations of comic book material, where it was just using characters, and now we're actually using things that have actually been written in comic books. People are more capable of filming those and making them more believable, I guess.
Right. And if you've listened to our shows, you'll probably know that I encourage you to watch the ones that came before or read the books that came before, as, like you said, the history of it. But I think it really gives you, number one, I think it's just fun just to see how far we've come and how things have changed and evolved. But it kind of makes you appreciate this long, like you said, 50 years of S.H.I.E.L.D., this long history of these comic book stories and characters and how they seem to be continuing, for so long. It doesn't seem like something like that would be able to continue, but it's so well loved. So
a lot of the stories are just classics. I mean, they work on very basic archetypes of storytelling and mythology and stuff like that, from the Superman or Batman kind of story down to even, the war type of story or the Cold War story with secret agents and spies and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, James Bond, it's just something that, people, it's a story type that people love and can continue watching. And I would say to anybody, who watches Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV now and goes, oh man, that is ridiculous. That is so unbelievable. All right. I'm just going to say, go back 15, 20 years and watch one of the superhero shows from back then. And then tell me how good the stuff is we're getting now on TV.
I agree. And it got me thinking watching this, it got me thinking about, all the different versions of comic book stories that we've had and how they're very different and they're very they're loved by different groups of people, and those people are very passionate about what they love and how they talk about it, and they defend it quite a bit. So I kind of broke it down into four different categories that I see as far as where comic book storylines go, and I gave a few examples to kind of hopefully illustrate what I thought. But and then I want to kind of defend each one of these because I actually really enjoy watching all of these. At least
there's a place
most
for
of
all
the time.
Of these.
Yeah, there is a place for all of them, and I don't think you have to just stick with just one. You know, I'll kind of get into that. But
okay, yeah. So what are your categories here? Let's go.
Okay, well, the first one obviously is comic books themselves, the actual comic books,
the original medium.
Yeah, that for a long time was the main source of comic book stories. I would argue that it really is maybe not anymore. I kind of feel as if we're
in an era. You're telling me that comic book stories originated with comic books?
Yeah, I know. Isn't that weird?
That is so weird.
It is weird. but I kind of feel as if we're in an era now where the comic book movie is actually the main comic book storytelling medium. At least as far as mainstream, right, exactly. I mean, clearly, you know, there's tons of really awesome comic books that you can get now, and they're still a lot of fun too, and rich story sources that you know that can make many movies for many years to come. But so obviously comic books, right? But then you get into what I think of as three different areas, and you could argue with this. You could certainly break it down if you have an idea of more areas. Let me know. But the first one is really campy representations of comic books, you know, on screen, either TVs or movies. And I'll give you kind of some examples of what I mean by really campy, and you see if they kind of fit into this. The Electric Company Spider-Man.
Oh, my god! Remember that? Wow, you're taking me way back now.
Now, that not only was, you know, very,
reader.
Very campy. Yes. Not only very campy, but it actually looked like a comic book. You know, they would zoom into the frame of a comic book, and that's where the scene would start.
Right, and they would have thought bubbles actually appear on screen with text in it to help the kids read, but because I think they also had a voiceover for it.
Yes, well, yeah, at least for Spider-Man, because he wore the mask. I don't think he ever talked behind that mask, if I remember right.
Right.
So that would be kind of my campy idea. Or Adam West's Batman, you know, from the 60s. Again, very comic booky. They didn't have did they have the screens? I don't think they had the screens, but they did have the on-screen sound effect onomatopoeia, you know?
Yep. Yeah, they didn't actually use comic book panels other than kind of the animated bits at the beginning, you know, in the intro.
Right, right.
For that
series. But the colors, the camera angles, things like that was very comic book.
That would probably be something that it can be identified as the most looking like a comic book. From all of the things you just discussed there.
Yeah. And then if you want to get into more modern, I would say maybe, and you could argue that this necessarily wouldn't be in this category, but Ang Lee's Hulk movie.
Okay.
I felt as if he was, and I don't know how campy that was, you know, and some of these could fit maybe more than one or a different category.
Yeah.
That'd be up for debate. But, you know, I even remember seeing kind of some makings of before this movie came out, you know, where he was trying to make it very much feel like those comic books. And I think they did have some kind of panel feel, you know, they would either go from shot to shot as you were looking down a panel. And I think even sometimes they had more than one panel on the movie screen at a time. And so I kind of feel like that was a very comic booky representation of you know a comic book.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. It's been a while since I've seen that one, but it was.
Yeah.
It was not as. Yeah, I wouldn't say necessarily campy, but it did represent more of a feel of the comic book in trying to, like you say, represent a panel or panels of a page.
Right. And if you go, and it might fit better in this other category that was very similar, but they're just comic book interpretations for a specific audience, for a comic book reader audience, or maybe a younger audience, you know, depending on who you ask that. But and it might fit in that. I would also say that this, you know, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., this movie that we're talking about would fit into that. And maybe a Batman and Robin, you know, the George Clooney, Schwarzenegger
debacle. See, now I throw that one back over into the campy realm.
Would you throw it in the campy realm?
That was, that was campy with a capital G-A-Y in front of it there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, and again, those were very similar categories, but I felt like they're sort of interpreting the feel of a comic book on screen, and that's where I've kind of felt those two categories came. But then, as you got into the 70s and 80s, you had comic book storytelling, which was a little bit more of a realistic, more real world feel to it, and yet it still had those comic book elements to it. And the 1977 Superman with Christopher Reeve, I think, would fall. That was 77, wasn't it? Was that 77?
78.
78. Okay. That I think it would fall into that, you know, because they put a little bit more of the, you know, adult drama into it, and I think it was made for more for older audiences, but yet was still welcoming to younger audiences and young.
Oh, totally.
Young
yeah.
Comic book
I mean,
readers.
Their whole thing was, you know, I think they really wanted to try to make a believable, you know, because again, up till that point, the Adam West Batman was kind of like the representation of like superheroes, and everybody thought superheroes or comic books were still kind of for kids. So they wanted to make it a, like you said, a real world, more believable thing. The tagline, "You'll believe a man can fly." And you know, I remember watching that as a kid and just being blown away. It's like, whoa, you know, Superman is awesome. And then I realized that Superman is not awesome as I got older. And discovered, of course, The Dark Knight. And then I said, The Dark Knight is awesome.
They can both be awesome in different ways.
No. One has to be better than the other.
No. And I would also say maybe Tim Burton's Batmans fell into that category as well, as more real world, but not always true to life, you know?
Yeah, definitely more adult.
Right.
I think, or aspiring to a more adult audience and stuff like that.
Right. And then, I don't know, let me get your opinion on this. I was trying to think of where to place the other TV shows that we do podcasts on. So the CW Flash, would you think that one fits into that more real world but comic book feel?
Yeah.
I put it there because of the metahumans in that, you know, because they have superpowers.
Right. I mean, it definitely is trying to present itself as a real world, like this could be your city. And then, by the way, we got these people with really bizarre powers, and they do take some of those characters with superpowers that are on the page pretty crazy. It's like, how are you going to represent this in more of a, you know, a realistic world where it's not just, oh yeah, this guy happens to shoot lasers from his eyes and we're not really going to explain how that happens. It just does.
Right. And see that again, that's same with Superman, you know, or, you know, you're talking a Joker from Tim Burton's Batman or even the Penguin, you know, I mean, there's,
yeah.
So that's why I put it there. Again, you know, you could kind of debate or put them in different categories, but, and then my final category that I divided them up into was the gritty or the very realistic reimagining where it would fit into our world because there isn't necessarily any superpower so much, although you know, very high abilities with the heroes and sometimes the villains too. The Dark Knight series I think would fit into that for sure. As a matter of fact, I almost think it defined that category.
Yeah, that, you know, like The Watchmen, something like that.
That was a good one. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Maybe even the new Fantastic Four movie that's coming out as well. We don't really know too much about that, but they keep saying they want that to be gritty.
So. Yeah, and I almost put the old Fantastic Four movie in the last category. But yeah, I was thinking that one. Almost anything in the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now, I think, would fit into this. They're not necessarily gritty, but they do try to make them very real world or believable.
Right.
You know, again, moving back and forth, Man of Steel, I think, would fit in that. They definitely try to make it darker and grittier. I don't know how successful it was in my eyes, but everybody's got their own tastes. And then again, trying to fit our shows in there, I think Arrow would probably fit in that.
Yeah, Arrow is, because there's less superpowers and stuff definitely going on in that series.
Would you say Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fits there?
It might straddle the line between your previous category and this one because I feel it's very realistic and it's very set in the modern world, but I also don't feel it's like gritty. It does try to, on the continuum, it's closer to the left edge.
Agreed.
Of that one.
Especially once they added the Inhumans to it.
Right.
So,
right.
So anyway, that was just kind of my thoughts and ideas on where comic books fit. I'm not saying any one of those is better than others. I, you know, you may enjoy one of those more than others. I enjoy all of them to some point. Depends on, you know, what the particular story was. But this Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. movie with David Hasselhoff, I thought it was fun. I had a really good time. That's one I could just sit down with a big bucket of popcorn and just sit and have fun and enjoy and laugh along with and quote the lines from because they were so over the top. But thank you for recommending it.
sure. Yeah, I mean, definitely if you are sitting down expecting, you know, Superman or the Dark Knight series or, you know, the Batman Begins or anything like that, this is not that. But yeah, it's definitely better than, you know, like the Batman, the original Batman series with Adam West and stuff like that. It's,
I'd say more realistic, maybe. I don't know about better.
Well, okay.
I guess it depends on what you like.
Yeah, it does. It does depend on what you like. But like I said earlier, you guys can check this out for yourself. If you go to YouTube and search for Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., you'll find the video. We'll post the link on our show notes here as well for you guys. But yeah, it's about an hour and a half, and it's fun. I think it's a great little summer flick to watch just to, you know, take your mind off something for, you know, an hour and a half. I think that works out pretty well. So we got a piece of feedback in here a little bit late from last season, so I did want to share this. This came in through our email, I believe, or maybe it was – maybe it got tweeted to us. I can't remember. But this is from Agent Tony. And he, in talking about when we were talking about on the series finale, whether or not Agent Ward actually shot his dog, he says that Agent Ward did shoot his dog, which I think you and I were kind of sold on, given some of the discussion that happened in the season finale. But he also points out how it mirrors Ward shooting Kara. She's like a lost little puppy as well, you know, and then he had to put her down, not necessarily because he wanted to, but it was another, you know, step in his evolution. And so he asks, you know, what do we think about that? Which I think that's a pretty good idea there that the writers were using that as a comparison for the character and kind of his, like I said, evolution.
Yeah. And the more I think about it, and after reading this, I really do think he shot his dog. I mean, he's pretty crazy.
Yeah,
I think he's gone over the edge there. I don't think he's coming back.
way over the edge, off the deep end, into the other pool down the street, and kept going, huh? All right. So, well, thanks, Tony, for writing in about that, and then. Couple references that we saw here in the show, besides stuff that we've already mentioned here as far as characters and stuff like that, I thought, and now I may be wrong because I was not a huge Baywatch fan, but I felt like the opening was – sorry.
Where would Baywatch fit on that continuum of comic?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of comic booky, but it's also very realistic. But sometimes there's a lot of silicone. So the opening of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. was very much like Baywatch. They are skimming across the water. Isn't that how Baywatch opened, where they would do like a helicopter shot across the water?
Yeah, I think so.
So as that was their little, yeah, their little title piece there. Alexander Pierce mentioned that he trained at the S.H.I.E.L.D. Kirby Academy, which is obviously a reference to comic book artist Jack Kirby, who was one of the co-creators of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then there was a part where there's the virus that that Hydra introduces called the Death's Head virus. Death's Head is a Marvel UK character. I don't know. I think he's showing up over here in some of the comics, but very popular character from, AD 2000, I think, or something like that in Marvel's, UK line of comics. And, I think he is related to, Judge Dredd in some possibilities. I'm not terribly familiar with the character. Anyway, the Death's Head virus doesn't really seem to have anything to do with that character. It's just what they call it. But at one point, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents put on hazmat suits because there's been someone that's infected. And I felt that they were the big yellow hazmat suits, but they kind of had squared off tops, very much like the AIM costumes in the comics for the people for Advanced Idea Mechanics. So that was kind of cool. And then, I mentioned Pinsir's quote earlier about calling Nick Fury a comic book coward, which I thought was pretty neat. So, any other final thoughts on the show, the movie?
I thought it was great fun. It really kind of reminded me of Jim Steranko's Nick Fury. I like those stories because they're kind of retro fun for me. So, it was good time, fun thing to watch in the summer. Now maybe it's time to go back and catch up on season two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I'm looking forward to Comic-Con news and hearing what we get from that. So,
yeah, so look forward to our next summer spectacular, probably coming out sometime either towards the end of July or in August. And we will bring you all the news that we had about Comic-Con and anything else we hear about season two. If you guys would like to suggest anything else for us to discuss on the show that you guys might like to hear about, please feel free to send it in to us. But that's all we've got for this this month's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
We hope you guys had a good time, as much fun as I had watching, David Hasselhoff. I saw somebody review this online. They said it was Hasselhoffle.
Clever.
But if you did enjoy this, leave feedback for us on iTunes. We would love to see more feedback there. You can also contact us. Send us an email at shield@randomchatter.com. You can tweet at us on Twitter @agentspodcast. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/agentspodcast, and let me know if there's any other categories I missed for superhero stories, and tell me where you'd fit maybe some of the other movies and TV shows in that continuum.
And as Josh mentioned earlier, we do some other podcasts for some CW shows here. We do Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which are also available on randomchatter.com. These shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.